Welcome to the Single Greatest Choice podcast, where single women find support, empowerment, information, and inspiration around the topics of singleness, fertility, motherhood, and mindset. I'm your host, Katie B., and I'm thrilled to be back to share more stories of women like you and me who are navigating these choices, along with interviews with experts in the fields of fertility preservation, coaching, and psychology. Whether you're just starting to question what to do about your finite fertility, or whether you're ready to make the leap into solo motherhood by choice, I hope these conversations will help you to feel more supported and confident along the way. Because whatever you decide to do with these years could be the single greatest choice you'll ever make, and you don't have to make it alone. Hi, listeners. I am super excited to finally bring this interview to you guys. I recorded this an embarrassingly long time ago, last July. This is an interview with one of my shared donor recipient families. So Mirav is a single mother by choice. Her daughter Noah and my son Miles are donor siblings. And we got to speak to each other last summer, kind of right as I was headed back to work after maternity leave, and just around the time when solo parenting went from hard to even harder because my baby just kind of stopped sleeping independently. And as many of you know, if you've followed my journey, we are just turning a corner with that now. So it's taken the better part of a year, but I have finally edited this interview. The reason why it took me so long to get this done, in addition to the fact that I just have very, very little time on my own these days, is that Mirav and I had never spoken before except in one kind of group Zoom call. So this was our first conversation and we talked for a very long time. And we talked about a lot of things that we knew at the time weren't going to be shared on the podcast. We were just chit-chatting. And then other things that kind of in hindsight I've decided not to share. So you'll note that there are a couple of times where there's kind of an awkward segue and it's because there are pieces of the conversation that needed to be removed in order to just protect the privacy of other donor sibling families, of our donor himself, and just to really respect all of the involved parties. But I am really excited to bring this to you guys. Mirav is just lovely. I feel so blessed to be connected with her. I'm so glad that our kids are half siblings and that they will be able to grow up knowing of each other and getting to know each other and just sharing that bond with one another. So with no further ado, this is Mirav. Hi, Mirav. Welcome to the Single Greatest Choice podcast.
Hi, Katie.
I'm so excited to have you here.
I'm so excited to be here and to see your smiling face.
Yes. So talking about donor siblings is something that I've been thinking about for a long time. It's been a huge evolution for me. And honestly, the first time I kind of pseudo met you online, I was like, ooh, I think she might be the one that I could have this conversation with.
So I'm flattered.
Yes. I hope that's not awkward, but you've been targeted for a while to have this conversation with me.
Well, maybe because I'm so chatty and open and, you know,
that is part of it. Yes. You're willing. Chatty and open. And so, for the listeners, we'll just share that, Rob and I met through a group where we have connected with lots of, I don't know how many, do you know how many? Several, many families.
I wouldn't say it's definitely a fraction of how many there really are.
Right.
But I don't know, maybe 20?
20 families, 20.
Yeah. There's some twins to single moms, and then there's some partnered women couples that are both in the group. Right. So I think it probably, I don't know, somewhere.
We've got like 20-ish babies, 20-ish moms.
Yeah. Yeah. Give or take.
Anyway, Mirav and I share a donor. And so we connected post conception, post birth, I guess. I guess I was still pregnant when we met, but
you were. But yeah. And I was still pregnant when I joined the group too.
Yeah, that is so cool. So we want to talk about all the things. I want to hear about your story of becoming a single mother by choice. And then also we can kind of get into how we both ended up choosing our donor, because I'm curious about whether we had some of the same thought processes to get us there. And then just what it's like to be connected with our donor sibling group.
So I am 40. I got pregnant with my daughter, who is now will be 9 months in a week or two. So I was 38 when she was conceived, and then 39 when she was born, and then I just turned 40. When I hear a lot of Single Mothers by Choice talk, a running theme is I always knew I wanted to be a mother. Like, it's something I knew. And what's funny for me is that I didn't really feel that way. For a long time, I was kind of like, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I'm fine either way, for years. And then I think what happened when I turned around 38 was more of this feeling of like, well, I don't want it to not be my choice. Like, I want to have control over this, and just feeling like, you know, the time was just slipping. And it's hard because I don't feel 40. So it's tough when, you know, physically, you know, reproductively you're that age, but you don't actually feel it. So that was kind of tough. And I think it was more from a, like, I don't want this decision or this choice to just like be taken from me and not have control over the situation. And I think I was listening to your podcast and that came up. Someone said like, oh, Single Mothers by Choice are probably like the most control freak.
Yes.
And I do think that was kind of it. I was like, I want to have control over this myself. And so I just on a whim said to my mom, like, I have like a distant cousin who I knew did this 20 years ago or something. And so I said to my mom, like, oh, what about, you know, so-and-so, didn't she do that? You know what? I'm thinking maybe I'll look into it. It just kind of got the ball rolling and it all happened very quickly for me. I'm realizing slowly how much of a unicorn I and my daughter are. And I almost, guilty isn't the right word.
I knew you were going to say that. Don't feel guilty.
I don't feel guilty, but I just, it's tough when I meet all these women doing this and going through so much, and not even just Single Mothers by Choice. Also, you know, friends that I know who are going through fertility treatments with a partner. I was able to conceive Noah, my first IUI, unmedicated. And even when I purchased the sperm, I was like chatting with my mom about like, should I buy 4 in store and this and that? And, you know, it's a deal if you get this, and they're having a sale if you buy this many. It's like, and then I don't know, I just had it in my head. I was like, you know what, I'll just buy one, whatever. And it worked, which even more so just makes me feel like she was so meant to be in my life and in my world, and everything's changed. Miraculously, that IUI, my first and only, was right before COVID really hit here. Noah is my daughter's name. Noah is a Valentine's baby. I had my IUI right around Valentine's Day. It was February 15th. And so then my 2-week window, and then it was like early March, and then the world shut down. And I was like, oh my God, I slipped in that last cycle. Like, was would have, you know, last. I would have had to like wait and then start it back up again.
So she was,
which I think is a running theme in this whole journey, is that like, when it does finally happen, if it does, if it doesn't, whatever, I feel like there's this kind of like inner peace that you have to get to, where you're just like, this was exactly where I was meant to be, when I was meant to have her. Having her now on my own, it's like I can't imagine doing it with someone else. I'm exactly where I was meant to be. She's here with me, and it just, your path just leads you where you're supposed to be.
Okay, I want to go back just a little bit to your decision making, because you made it sound like so easy, like you just kind of were like, okay, I think I'm gonna do this, and you did it one time and it worked. I know logistically, like in terms of you did one IUI unmedicated and it worked, but emotionally, psychologically, like how was that decision? Like once you started thinking about it, were you pretty sure it was what you wanted to do? Or was there any like wavering back and forth?
So from the moment I said to my mom, I think this might be something I want to do, to when Noah was born was less than a year.
Wow.
So it was like mid-November. It happened to be around just about a year. It was like mid-November, I mentioned it. And then like 2 weeks later, I had an appointment with a reproductive endocrinologist. And then we kind of spelled out how everything could go. You know, I heard someone else on your podcast say this, and I agree. And it's a lot of like, you bite off what you can chew. You just like take a little bit at a time. And I remember my mom being like, well, what about like IVF this and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you know what? Like, why don't we just cross that bridge when we get to it? And that's how I feel even about having a baby now. It's like, I'm just like, okay, I'm going to deal with right now we're starting solids, or like right now we're, you know, right now we're dealing with the baby gates, or, you know, so it's like every month or two, or like even in a week, it's everything changes so quickly. You just nibble at it and it's easier to digest, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how that went. I had a IUD. So I had to like make an appointment, have that taken out. And I kind of just like ran with it. I don't think I like sat and really was like, what does this really mean? Like, I kind of was just like, you know what? F it. Let's go
give it a shot.
It. Yeah. Yeah.
So how did you feel when you got that positive pregnancy test? Like, what was, did you have an oh shit moment ever at any point? Or were you just like, okay, this is what we're doing?
You know, maybe like the night before I went in for the IUI, I was a little hesitant and a little like you've talked about, I was a little like, am I picking the right donor? You know, that type of thing. But then it kind of like went away, and I had SMC mentors who have been available to me. And I remember calling one that night and she was just like, Marav, you're fine. I was like, did you feel like this? And, you know, and she was like, yes. And so I think that helps a tremendous amount. And that's why I think it's great that you have this podcast for people who don't necessarily know anyone or have anyone or have a group local to them. Or,
yeah. How did you connect? Was it in a group, like a local SMC group?
Yeah. So I didn't even know about the local group. My mother, who's very, was like so on board with all this. She knew someone, and without even asking me, which I'm happy about. Like,
love moms.
Yeah. But like all of a sudden I get this email from some random stranger that was like, you know, so-and-so like blah, blah, blah. Your mom asked you, I don't know. Like,
it's like pretty personal stuff to be just randomly.
It was very like indirect, like connection. But I think that's the beauty of it, is that like, I feel like that even now too, having gone through it, I'm totally open to like helping someone else go through it too. And it's just like this kind of pass the torch type of encourage and support other women feeling. And, yes. And I think, you know, that's how those mothers were to me, and that I hope to be for someone else, you know?
Yeah. I think that's a really great segue, because I think I agree with you that there is just a community vibe of women who have made this choice, like wanting to kind of support other women. Like a lot of the Instagram accounts I see are like, some are just sharing their own journey, but a lot are sharing their own journey with the intent of helping and supporting and kind of providing, like being that one step ahead for other women on the path. I mean, there's very cheesy language, like journey and path, but you know, it's what we say. So, but I think that's a good segue into our donor sibling group, because that is something that I have said a lot about why that's been such a positive thing, is it's like automatic community. Like just by default, I want to know the people in that group. I want to like them. I feel an affinity towards them without needing to know a lot about who they are, just because we have this one thing in common. So let's kind of go there. Like, will you talk about how you chose the donor that you chose?
Sure. So I didn't, again, similar to my choice, my decision to do this, you know, I didn't even look at that many donors. Adult photos were important to me. And I think I only read maybe like 5 bios. And then I was just like, but you know his profile and his written statement. And I had said this to, like, I had a couple of friends who came over and we looked together. And, you know, I thought into myself in my head that, like, you know, even with an open ID and whatever, I knew that it didn't matter. You know, his photos were attractive, but it wasn't someone I was going to date. So that wasn't really like the only thing I was looking at. And I just knew that at some point my child would probably read that bio or statement and over and over and over again, you know, just trying to know a piece of them. And I wanted it to be something of substance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our donor is on the older side for, yep. for donors. I forget how old he was when he donated, but in his 30s, whereas, you know, some of the
2 years younger than us. So he's like in the same age bracket, I would say.
But I don't know when he donated.
Yeah,
because I don't even think they'll take over 35. So it was definitely.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But yeah. I agree, like there's a huge difference between someone who's 20, I mean, literally half our age and donating mm-hmm. versus someone yeah. who's 2 years younger than us right. in terms of their ability. And this is a huge assumption, but I think it's reasonable. Like their ability to process the gravity of what they're doing with when they're donating.
Totally. And I would agree wholeheartedly. And that was part of it too. I was like, you know, some of these profiles were kids who were like 20, you know, in college or whatever. And that's fine. You know, plenty of single moms by choice go that route. And honestly, like at the end of the day, your child's your child. It doesn't really matter. And whoever you choose and when it works, it just, like I was saying before, it's all just like meant to be, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know but, some women prefer yeah. a younger donor because right. they're looking at sperm mobility right. or motility or whatever that, you know, those types yeah. of things. And especially if they have known fertility concerns on right. their end, it's like, they're sort of, it feels like they're sort of leveling things out by having a younger donor.
Yeah.
But for me, I remember looking at donors and on one, I clicked on the adult photo, 'cause that was also mm-hmm. important to me to be able to see them as an yeah. adult. And it mm-hmm. was a guy in his high school letter jacket. And I was like, not an adult. Like, if that's your most recent adult photo, like, if this feels creepy to me.
Yeah, no, for sure. And also, you know, some of these kids who are 20, you know, the motives behind donating, I had to think about, and ultimately, like, does it really matter the motive? You end up with your child, so whatever.
Right.
But I think I wanted it to be from an altruistic, you know, motive versus just tuition. That's just how it goes, though. Most of the donors are going to be in that younger age bracket.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think our donor was rare in that fact. But yeah, so that was compelling to me that like a younger donor would eventually in 18 years or whatever, get all these requests for contact and not really have thought that far ahead. Because I didn't think 18 years ahead when I was 20.
Right,
I mean,
right.
I don't even remember what I was doing when I was 20, you know, and just, you know, the profile and the written statement of our donor, it was lengthy and it showed a lot of his character and kindness. And that was what was important to me, you know, whereas others were like, oh yeah. And my favorite family vacation was Colorado and
right
you know right. or like I enjoy playing video games with my friends and stuff, and I was like, oh god,
yeah. Yeah, so. And people have such different priorities and there's no right or wrong answer. Mm-hmm. And I often see people kind of talking online about like, how do you choose a donor? And mm-hmm. and I've, you know, a little bit about my story that I've done this mm-hmm. 3 different times, and I did yeah. start out prioritizing more of the physical characteristics, not like I need a super good looking donor, but I mm-hmm. wanted a donor that resembled my family. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that was important for identity issues with my kid.
Yeah.
So I typically date.
And look, you got a races. Kid that looks just
I know,
like you.
I did end up with a kid who looked just like me, and I did not choose a donor that looked just like me, which is hilarious. It never occurred to me that would happen without like strategically choosing a donor for that purpose. But yeah, the men that I've dated have mostly been Hispanic, Black, like not, like different races, or at least just like coloring different mm-hmm. to where my child would not end up looking like my family. And so this was the first, cause I'm just not attracted to men who look like me, I guess. So this was the first time where I was like, oh, I could sort of like curate this baby that's going to have
right.
blue eyes. Cause the one thing right. I never thought was that I would have a blue eyed baby, cause I've never in my life dated a blue eyed guy. Yeah. So I did prioritize looks, and then, and it ended up feeling just sort of clinical a little bit. Like the mm-hmm. first donor I chose, there were some compelling, it was more like his academics and areas of interest mm-hmm. that I was like, oh, that's a nice balance. Like right. I liked him more as a person, but I didn't feel this like sense that he's a really good human. I just thought that's a good mix. That's a good choice. Right. And then the second one was like very much based on the physical characteristics. And I actually did get pregnant through an IUI with that donor. And I immediately had like donor regret, which I have not heard anybody else talk about. Mm. But that was a big thing where I knew that I would get over it. But yeah. immediately when I found out that I was pregnant, I was like, oh, I should have chosen a different donor, which was not a great feeling to have. But that ended up ending in miscarriage. And then with the donor that ultimately is the donor that we both have and share, I really did prioritize. I just wanted, if my son reaches out to him, to be a good human. And I think because we both prioritized that, and I think so many other women in our donor sibling group did as well, I think that's the reason why our group is just such incredible women.
Yeah. Well, I think it attracted a lot of like-minded women together, because I think we were all gravitated toward this profile for similar reasons. Mm-hmm. I feel that way as well. I don't know how other women feel in their sibling groups or whatever they're called.
So how did you connect, or when did you connect with the group? Or when did you start first thinking about the fact that there even would be other families? Because for me, that was not a first, like it took a while before that even occurred to me that I'm not the only one.
I don't even remember. I think maybe I was listening to a podcast and it mentioned there's a donor sibling registry and then just various things. And I was like, oh, well, I'll look. And then I looked and there was a post about our donor, and then I was pregnant at the time. So, you know, you had time to kill, and it was COVID.
Back when we had free time.
Right. I had so much. Not only was I pregnant and not really doing much, it was also, you know, the world was shut down. Yeah. So I guess I just started like snooping around and came across it, and then asked to join our private group. Yeah. And then the rest is history. And now I feel like I'm slowly seeing all of these siblings grow up, mm-hmm. you know.
Did you have any apprehension about connecting with donor siblings?
I don't think so. I think I was just like, it just felt fine to me. I think I just was like, yeah.
Oh my gosh. I love you, because you're like so, you're so laid back about all this. I've like overanalyzed every second of this whole situation, and you're like, no, it just happened. It just worked.
Yeah.
So nice.
No, I do think, I don't want to like take decisions away from my daughter that should be her decisions. And that's kind of maybe one thing that I thought about. And there's been talk in our group about, you know, meeting in person, and, you know, we've done a couple Zooms with other, you know, with many of us on the call, you know, and I do hope to meet you or others in person at some point. But part of me does wonder and question, you know, am I taking that decision away from my daughter that could ultimately just be her choice when she's old enough to decide whether she wants to meet these half biological siblings.
Yeah.
So that I do, you know, right now, when she doesn't know anything, you know, it's fine to just, you know, schmooze with you guys on Facebook. And I don't know how to describe it, because I'm obviously not related to you or your son, and vice versa, you're not related to us at all.
Right.
But it does, but our kids are, you know, biologically, and blood doesn't make family, right? But relationships do. And, you know, friendship, I consider friends family. And so ultimately, if we grow these friendships and these relationships, then it's not just blood. It's more than that. And I do almost feel like all these babies in the group are somehow related to me, even though they aren't technically. So there is sort of like a, I don't know, not like nieces or nephews, but like maybe cousins or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I feel I've said a lot of the exact same things that you're saying. I've thought about like, am I facilitating something that actually should be his choice? Like, am I kind of overstepping? And then I've also thought about like, who are these people to me? I know who they are to my son-ish, kind of by blood, at least. Like I could draw, like, I know how they're related on paper, but you know, but yeah, like a lot of the same thought processes. And kind of where I landed with the am I sort of facilitating something that should be up to him? Is mm-hmm. that I have no, there's no question in my mind that he's going to meet my friend Sarah's kids because she's my friend and I hang out with her and like mm-hmm. she has kids and they're, and that doesn't mean he has to like them or play with them. I mean, he'll probably
right.
play with them when we're around each other, but you know, right. they're not like, you remember, like as a kid, you kind of play with your parents, friends, kids, like just by default, but that doesn't mean once you get old enough to kind of select your own friends that you
right.
stay close with them. I think right. it will be kind of like that where it's like,
yeah,
these are, this is the group and you right. at a certain point, our kids are going to be the ones deciding to FaceTime or Facebook or whatever. Right. I don't know what the technology will be, but like it
won't right. and it won't be with all of them. They'll right. have just like the moms in the group will gravitate towards who they feel most connected with. The kids will do the same thing, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you know.
I listened to a podcast, and now honestly, I listen to so many different podcasts. I cannot mm-hmm. even remember which one it was, but there was a young man who was talking about his experience as a donor conceived mm. person and finding out. I think he had always known he was donor conceived, but he was in a donor sibling group with a lot of adult mm. children that were just finding out. Mm-hmm. And they were all still kind of searching for each other and connecting because they're, you know, 2 decades or more yeah. older than our kids. Right. And the way he described it was he said, it's kind of like if you've gone to the same summer camp as someone, or you're in the same fraternity, or it's just this like affinity where as soon as you find out that you have that connection of being mm-hmm. related through your donor, mm-hmm. you automatically want to kind of explore like what else you have in common, or is this mm-hmm. a person that I could see myself being friends with? But sometimes right. that only connection, and so mm-hmm. There's no reason to kind of keep
right
trying to go deeper with that relationship, but you do just automatically have an affinity. And I feel that same way about, like, I don't feel about every baby the way I feel about your baby,
right,
because of that connection that we have.
Yes. And it's strange because I'm not related to your baby at all,
right,
but I do feel that mm-hmm. connection as well. Mm-hmm. I feel like a little protective of all our babies. Yeah.
I do feel like it would be nice if there was a word. I was actually telling someone today that I was talking with you and I was like, I don't know what she is to me. Our babies have the same donor. And like the person was like, sister wives. I was like, I mean,
Oh my God.
Not exactly, but I guess kind of.
I don't plan on having another. For me personally, I can't imagine having a baby and like a toddler, mm-hmm. you know, I can't fathom it. So really like having the donor group mm-hmm. because, you know, she will likely be an only child, but yet she won't. She will have all these mm-hmm. siblings if she chooses to connect with them. I mean, I hope that my nieces will be almost like sisters to her, but they won't technically. And I do think also just the fact that like knowing these other kids and these families makes it a little less strange or mm-hmm. unique, or, you know, that she is donor conceived.
Definitely. Yeah. Right. When I was, there was a period of time where I had gotten into the Sperm Bank Facebook group, put in our donor number and found, just saw a thread with some of you guys on it,
right,
and realized like there is a private group. I could pipe up and say, hey, I'm also pregnant with this donor and I would like to mm-hmm. join the group, but I wasn't sure if I wanted that. And I mm-hmm. had a period of time where I was like, is this weird? Does this creep me out? Do I want to know this much information? I was just processing. And my dad is my person that I always like kind of mm-hmm. process with. He's my best friend and just kind of talks me down off of all of the ledges. And so mm-hmm. as I was talking it through and just trying to articulate what felt a little strange to me, it's just because it wasn't a thing I'd ever thought that my child might have like dozens of siblings with, you know, half siblings with a donor. Like it just was I just had to wrap my brain around it. But he was like, honey, I just can't see anything wrong with more people to love your child.
Exactly.
And before I knew any of you guys, or before I asked to join the group, what I could see just in the interactions between those of you mm-hmm. who were talking on this board is that you were interested and supporting and cheering on each other's kids. You know, it just already felt like, yeah, that's only going to add to and enhance my child's life to have these people care about him.
Right.
And if it's weird, I'll just leave, you know?
Right. You don't, if it was overwhelming or you didn't like it, like you don't ever have to talk to these people again. Right. You know?
And there are probably about 20-ish kids and families in the group, but our donor, I think, has somewhere in the 60s. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot.
Yeah,
more.
I don't know the exact number.
I don't either.
But could probably find out, but it doesn't matter to me.
Yeah. So one of the things that happened for me that was kind of just, it was hard at the time. Now I'm like, why was that hard? I don't really remember, but just kind of a mental hurdle that I had to get past was, mm-hmm. So I joined the group, and at first that was really wonderful because I see all these incredible women posting very like-minded things where I'm like, oh, I feel good about being a part of this group. First of all, just the moms are cool. Then the
second
baby,
of all of the babies.
The
are
babies.
Adorable.
So cute.
We have the most adorable
the
babies.
The cutest babies. And I remember just pouring over their pictures, and I would think like, now I kind of know what my baby's going to look like. He does not really look like the other.
You posted the other day. You were like, I kind of see like Noah in him. And I'm like, oh. Okay. I guess so.
Yeah, no, he very much looks like my family, but they're all very, very cute.
Yes, adorable.
But something I was not expecting at all, which is true for our donor group, and it is, I'm sure, not true for many, many of the donor sibling groups, is that women in the group have connected directly with our donor.
Mm-hmm.
And so when that started to come up, that made me feel a little uncomfortable. And the reason why is because I had sort of mentally processed that the information in this profile that we all chose and mm-hmm. full of good information. And you and I chose it for similar reasons of like, mm-hmm. You do get a sense of the character of this person.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked about how choosing a donor is kind of like online dating in terms of like the profile and the information. Mm-hmm. But then the difference is this guy never has the opportunity to like disappoint you, because once like that profile is all you ever get, and then for 18 years by the time he's a real person who interacts with your kid or doesn't, it's a,
you already know your kid, they're grown, you're in love with them, like
and so I had kind of prepared myself for how I would answer questions for my son and the types of conversations mm-hmm. we might have, and just being able to be 100% honest with him about like, well, this is everything we know. We don't know his name. We don't know where he is. We don't know where he lives. We don't know. And then now we're in a situation where we actually could find out. And like, am I going to tell Miles that we know who he is, that he could potentially have connection with him earlier than 18?
Yeah.
Like that's not what I signed up for. And so it made me, it was just a big like mental shift to realize.
You're probably going to laugh, but I don't know. I just kind of feel like whatever happens, happens. Like,
of course you do.
I like that if she wants to, it's there.
Yeah.
Because I can't imagine going through even 18 years and adolescence and high school and all those things with just a lot of unknown, because you already feel so like you don't know what's going on, who you are, who you want to be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and obviously, you know, she came from me, I'm raising her, but she's still at some point going to have a, like, where do I come from moment, you know? Yes. And I have a friend who her father left when she was young, and she doesn't know him, you know. She has a stepfather who she calls dad and who she considers her father. But, you know, it's fascinating because I've said, you know, you could do like 23andMe or whatever they are, and you could potentially like figure out where he is or whatever, and she doesn't want to know, and that might be Noah also. She might not care, you know. All our children might have different views, but at least I feel like if she does, it will be easier for her. And I also think knowing that her donor is open to being contacted, at any point, that just her knowing that will be a sense of relief, you know?
Yeah. And I definitely agree. I think that the good far outweighs any kind of discomfort. I think the discomfort was about
me. It's kind of like your dad said, like, it's there.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You can just leave it if you want, if you don't want it, you know?
Right. And I do, I think that I was uncomfortable because it puts me in a position where maybe I have to decide like when and how to dole out
information
that I have.
Right.
But for him, it's all good. I think the more transparent, the more access he has, the, you know, that's nothing but good. And I have not connected personally with our donor. Have you? I can't remember if you have.
I have. Yeah. Yeah.
But I do get a sense from those of you guys that have connected with him. There's a level of like, I don't worry anymore that this is a guy that's going to totally disappoint my kid in terms of
not at all,
in terms of like not being responsive in 18 years or whenever he is interested.
And I actually was talking to another mother in our group who has also been in contact with him. And her view was like, he knows us now. At some point there's going to be like 100 kids, right? He's going to have 100 babies.
Hopefully not 100. It's got to be slowing down because he's been sold out for so long. Like, it's got to be
true. But like, just think about it. Like, you have your embryos, people have like vials on ice, you know. To be honest, I could find out, but I don't care.
No.
But yeah, I think it'll be up there. It'll be high. And there's potential for all of those to be reaching out at some point. Many of them may not even know that he's open to being contacted. A little backstory is that people probably who are listening might not even understand, like, how do you guys know the donor? Like, how did you get this information?
I don't even actually know
The
story.
So Zytex has they call it Zytex Connects, and you can join it. I'm not in it, so I'm speaking from what I believe to be true. You can join it once you have a confirmed birth. So we could join it. And I think they monitor it too. Mm-hmm. And
I think I have joined it, but I didn't
know
how it worked once I got in there. So I was like, I'm already in the group.
So you're in it. And I think it's like more of like a message board type of deal. And the donor is allowed to join it as well. And so he joined it and he's written to the group a couple times. And then I think when he joined, he was open to being contacted and let the group know. And then I just found out, I was shared his information because he had told one of the moms that he's fine with his information being shared. And when Noah was first born, I FaceTimed with him for a while, and it was fascinating. And it was a little strange, you know, and he's very respectful, and he was, you know, like, this is all just uncharted waters for all of us. Like, whatever, he kind of left it like in my shoes as where it should be, and was like, whatever you want, you know, if you want to not talk ever again, that's fine. If you want to meet sometime, that's fine. If you want to just, you know, he was like, whatever you want. And that's fine for me because I don't know what I want.
Right.
Like you said.
So
you
what
know.
Motivated you to reach out to him?
I guess after she was born, I was just so, you know, someone in one of the Facebook groups said the other day, like, do you ever feel like it's weird that your child's like half a stranger or something? You know, they were like picking a donor. And I thought to myself, I don't feel like she's half a stranger because obviously like a stranger is someone you don't know, right?
Right.
I know her very, very well. But when they're first born, I looked at her and I did think about it. I was just like, who are you in there? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I bet you that partnered couples say that too, because you're looking at your baby, and you know, and postpartum is no joke. I mean, I cried every day for like a month. And if anyone's dealing with any of that, I mean, talk to your doctor because people can help. But like that first initial couple weeks, you know, I haven't met one mother who said that they were like in love with their child, like completely that first week. weren't a mess. You know, it's just, you look at this little human that's been inside you and it's like, they all look like aliens. And you're like, you know, initially I was like, is she cute? Did I pick a good donor? You know, like, I can't tell. She just looked like this little string bean, you know?
Yeah. Mine is such a string bean too. And I remember when I was pregnant, I jokingly said, what if I get a skinny baby and I don't love it? And I was totally kidding, but I of course didn't think I was going to get a skinny baby because I don't know. I just thought I would get a chubby baby. It's so funny because I use the word string bean all the time too.
Yeah.
I would just sometimes, that's the moment that I was thinking of when you were talking about who is this baby? Like I would get him like unwrapped or unswaddled or whatever. And I'd be like, he's so long, because in my family, I like, for sure, I know he'll be taller than me by probably like,
yeah,
great. Like we're just not, yeah, we're not long, skinny people. And
how tall are you? I don't even know.
I'm 5'4". Okay. And I'm the tall one. I'm taller than my mom and my sisters.
Me too. And I'm 2.5, 3.
Okay. So
yeah,
she'll probably be taller than you, right?
Yeah, maybe? Probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, she was so skinny and just not, you know, they don't have expressions. Like mm-hmm. they don't start smiling for a long time and you're just alone with them and you're staring at their face. And it's just this kind of like mystery. And I guess maybe it was in those feelings, because it was very early on. I don't really feel a desire to like communicate with him now. Mm-hmm. You know, I got a lot of information. I can't even remember what, but it was fine. It was good. It was,
did you go in with specific questions you wanted to ask him or did you just kind of wing it?
No, I didn't, obviously.
Yeah.
Hey listeners. So this is one of those spots in the interview where of course I had questions for Mirav about our donor. This was at a point when I had not decided for myself if I was interested in contacting him, but I was so curious and I wanted to know more, but I don't want to include those things just because we don't have his consent to share things about him here. And I just want to respect everyone's privacy, but we chatted a little bit more about the donor and then I'm just going to pop us back into a different part of the conversation.
Would you like meet other of us in person? Or are you leaving it at the Facebook?
That's group? A great question. And that has changed for me a lot. I think when I first joined the group, I was like, this is a thing that I'm exploring, but I won't necessarily share with Miles. Like I might wait for mm-hmm. him to kind of be more like curious or open or kind of see,
right.
You know? So my thought was I will share with him, you know, there was this man that like to make a baby, it takes a part from a woman and a part from a man. And, you know, a doctor mm-hmm. helped us and this is the man, and show him pictures and then kind of say, and he also helped some other families. Like I had kind of thought through like,
right.
I'm going to articulate this whole thing. And then mm-hmm. I could ask him like, do you want to see pictures of some of the other mm-hmm. kids? Or do you want to, you mm-hmm. know, that's where I started. Now I'm like, for sure, I would take him to meet you and Noah and like mm-hmm. other, you know, not necessarily every single person, but the right. people that I feel like are a natural fit. Because right. like you said, I think if we lived in the same city, we would be friends and our kids would be right. friends just because we happen to be moms. We happen to be single moms. We happen to be single moms right. by choice. We happen to have kids close in age.
Right.
Like all of those things would naturally make us likely to hang out together. And so then you add on the layer of like, and we actually have the same donor. Like that's right. not even the main connection. Like that's not yeah. a necessary piece for us to need to hang out.
I even think that like, even if it's not in person, because who knows, I mean, we all have babies. We're all over the country mm-hmm. and Canada, and getting that to even happen will take work. And also might be when they're older and mm-hmm. can actually like mm-hmm. appreciate a trip somewhere. You know, I take her to like IKEA now and it's like we're at a museum. Yeah. So my feeling is that like if these relationships continue to build on Facebook, on FaceTime or phone calls or whatever, then eventually as they begin to actually comprehend information, it will be like, well, this is Katie and Miles. And, you know, like we have FaceTime with another mom and her son and like at bedtime and stuff. And I've like read a story or whatever.
Aww,
And her son is a little older. And she does say to him, like, oh, that's Merav and Noah, you know. And I don't think she necessarily says, like, your half sister. She just says, that's Merav and Noah. Like, and I think that eventually it will maybe just progress to that point with some of you in the group and not with others, just because I know there are some that aren't interested in you know, meeting or having mm-hmm. closer connections. They just want to, like, you know, watch from kind of afar in the group and post a little here and there. And that's fine too, because honestly, it's like this whole thing, I don't think any of us grew up thinking, you know, this was going to be our path. And if they did, it was very progressive for their time. It's so unknown. You just take it like one day at a time. You just like nibble by nibble and you just kind of figure out like, what works?
Well, and I also
and what feels right. And I think you just constantly have to be like asking yourself, like, does this feel right? Does this feel right? Does this feel okay?
Right. And I think for us, it feels uncharted and it feels like we have to really consider all of these different things. For our kids, mm-hmm. this is their normal. Like,
it's
this
their just norm. Is yeah.
Their life. Right. And for me, I think I want to treat the relationships like with you and Noah, for example, just the same way I would with any other friend right. and friend's kids. Like, I think that
my and that's one of my why best it'll be friends, like that's Merav and Noah, like
right and we love doing. Them because they're yeah. our friends and right. it doesn't have to be, you know. Yeah. I'm working on making this book for Miles that is just I'm making it just on like Shutterfly or, you know, yeah. type things that just says, this is me. And it's mm-hmm. like, this is my mom. This is my papa. This is my Grammy. This is my room. This is my dog. This is my donor. This is my, like, and it's just like one page right. in a book that's all about him, right. about Miles's life. And the donor is in there, but it's not a book about I'm right. donor conceived. And that's the most important thing about me. You know, like, I don't want to, yeah. I just, it's, to me, it's a detail just like any other.
It's just like, this is going to be their normal because right. we're going to make it their normal. You know, from an early on, I think our kids will see, you know, my kids will see my brother and his wife and my nieces and know that like, we don't have that. Like, she doesn't have that. So I think from early on, it'll just be like, this is our family. Our family is me and you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think you said something about this earlier about how you wanted, I think you did, about like wanting Noah to see other families like yours. And that's a mm-hmm. huge priority for me too. And so it doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily have to be other kids who share the same donor, but I definitely want right. Miles to have connections with other donor conceived kids, whether it's because it's a lesbian couple who used a donor right. or, I mean, my dad and his husband are primary caretakers other than me of my son. He right. spends all day with them right. when I go to work. And so I love that because I love that when we talk about families look all different ways, mm-hmm. it's not just a hypothetical or it's not something that's only in the books that we're reading or, right. you know, I want it to be very apparent. So when we're talking about families and he says, why don't I have a dad? The conversation is, some families just have a mom, right. like right. Noah just has a mom and so-and-so just has a mom. And I can list the people in his right. world.
Or so-and-so has two moms or so-and-so right. has two dads or so-and-so has one dad. Or,
right. And that's, you know, so much
or so-and-so
easier.
Just has like their grandma and grandpa grandma. Right. or whatever. Yeah.
And that conversation is so much more natural when the people, like when you have real life examples that are people that right. he knows. And so that's valuable right. to me too, is just as many close yeah. connections as he can have that will help him feel like my family.
And whatever their normal is, we'll just, I kind of could see in the future it being like, we think it's bigger deal than them.
Totally. Yeah.
And like, they're going to be like, mom, who cares? Like, whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, I just could see that happening. It's just like now having her alone and this, you might get this having Miles alone. I appreciate it because I know it comes from a good place, but a lot of times I get like, oh my God, how are you doing it alone? And like,
yeah, you're so brave.
God, that's amazing. Yeah. You're so brave. And like, you know, like, oh, you're my hero. I'm like,
I know. I'm like, you live with the same man for 20 years. That's also brave. Like, that's also
I'm just
amazing.
Like, yeah. And I'm like, you know what? This is my norm. I don't know what it's like to be able to like hand over to someone when I have to go to the bathroom. Like, she sits on my lap when I go to the bathroom sometimes. Like, that's just what you do.
Right.
And you know what? Partnered moms do it too. I don't know any different. I think when you don't, like, this is my norm and your norm and you but just figure it all out.
Like, I, okay, so my, when my dad came out, I was already an adult, but even still, I was a young adult, and like processing that and my feelings about that are very, very different than what I would think someone who's a kid now, if their dad came out, just because society is different.
Oh, like, yeah, for sure.
I think that, you know, women, a lot of times in the single mother by choice groups, you see a lot of women very concerned because they've joined the groups where there are donor conceived adults talking about how miserable they are and how much, you know, how much trauma it's caused. And I kind of compare that to being gay. It's like, if you want to know the experience of what it's like to be a child who comes out now, we're not going to talk to
people, you know, can't equate the two. It's like apples and oranges. It's
right.
Like,
and so
you can't equate our donor conceived children with a 25-year-old adult donor conceived person.
And when you listen to what they are upset about, oftentimes it's that they were lied to, things were hidden from them. And also society had a different view. I mean, it was something, it was shameful. It was something that or it was like, oh, I'm so sorry, you know?
Yeah.
And now
it's you know, before the ability to find your donor, you know, now Open ID, Anonymous, whatever, to, like you've mentioned before, doesn't matter, right? Mm-hmm. Ultimately, if you want to find someone genetically, it's not that hard anymore, correct? So I think that that also was very different for donor conceived population from 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. They had a lot of question marks they would
Yes, exactly. A feeling of, I will never know. I'll never know this. I'll never know that. And the information that women got when purchasing sperm was very minimal information as well. They weren't getting everything that we get.
It was like,
you know?
I think he's Swedish or something, you know, it was like,
Oh, the height, eye color.
They didn't have essays written of
audio recordings, adult pictures. Yeah. A lot more information, a lot more transparency. I have no doubt in my mind that my daughter will be just fine.
Me too.
You know, I let myself go through this rabbit hole one day of like reading comments on something on Facebook about women choosing to do this on their own, and comments, which I never should have read, but I did. A lot of like, oh, it's so selfish and, you know, it's not thinking about the child and blah, blah, blah. She's not going to be able to give that child, you know, what it needs. It needs two parents, whatever. It made me so angry, you know, because I can't even express the amount of love I feel for my child. You know, I almost feel like I love her more than two, three, four parents could even love their child. And I just don't think you can explain to someone who has that mentality how much you can give your child, how much you will give your child.
No, you can't. And you also can't know ahead of time whether you're a single parent or you're coupled or you go through a divorce or you go through a loss, or you don't know ahead of time what your path is going to look like. And so two parents who have a child together but hit major financial issues or major health issues or major marital issues, or there's just a lot of stress and tension in the home for whatever reason, or maybe they have another child who's medically fragile and then the first child doesn't get the attention. Like, there's so many reasons why parents aren't able to give their child everything that they would like to. And I think, like what you're saying, you and I both are in a position where, like, yeah, our kids don't have dads, but in terms of our emotional, our ability to like pour into them emotionally and even financially, like not, I mean, I don't know your situation. Like, I'm not rolling in the cash, but like, he's my top priority. So if I have money to spend, it's going to be on him.
my daughter will want for nothing. I can tell you that much. And she will have everything she needs, and she will have more love than she could possibly need. I will probably smother her to death. She just learned how to kiss me back when I put my face in her face and I say kiss, and she just like, you know, she face butts me sometimes, but she plants one on me now.
Marav and I went on to chat for several hours, and I just can't tell you guys how thankful I am that I decided to look for donor siblings, that I was open to chatting with her. This has just opened up such an incredible world of connections and relationships, and I'm so excited to see how these build and grow over the years. So I'll give you one last little piece of our conversation and then a kind of funny comment that I make at the end, and then I'll go ahead and wrap it up because I know this is a long episode, but I hope that you guys have enjoyed the conversation.
One thing that I have always said to other people when they say like, oh, well, you know, what made you decide to do this? I often say, I knew that if I did this, I would never regret it. Mm-hmm. But if I didn't do it, there was a possibility I would regret it. Mm-hmm. And I just wasn't willing to take that risk. I went through some moments while I was pregnant and even now where I do feel a little, I just don't have my life anymore. Mm-hmm. But it's not that I don't have my life anymore. I don't have that life anymore. I have my new life, you know, and I love my new life, but it is hard sometimes. And I say this for women who are trying or, you know, starting out on this journey, you just kind of have to mourn the loss. And I was telling a friend this the other day because she's considering this route. I said, you know, you won't be ready until you really fully mourn the idea of what you had for your future. And it was like a loss. I did take some time in those first, you know, that first month or two where I kind of had to fully accept that nuclear family, meeting someone, you know, that's gone. Mm-hmm. Even if I met someone now, it's not, I hate the word normal, but it's not normal, you know.
Right. It's not the fairy tale. It's different.
Exactly. And I kind of, you know, this wasn't my plan.
Right.
But I'll be damned if I can't imagine doing it with someone else.
No, like, me
honestly,
neither.
I don't want to. And sometimes people say to me like, oh, well, maybe you'll meet someone and then, you know, you'll become a family with someone you meet. And the idea of that doesn't even appeal to me. Like, I'm happy to meet someone to like spend time with and have in my life, but I don't want to share her. Mm-hmm. I just want her to be mine. It's selfish, mm-hmm. I guess. But I think having her has just brought like a fulfillment to my life, and just knowing that this was supposed to be my path and knowing that I'm in control of it.
Yeah.
As much as I can be.
Okay. Well, I feel like we had some really good conversation, and I will edit out a lot of things.
It must be a lot of work.
It is. And it'll take me a couple weeks probably to like,
I mean, no rush on my end,
but
thought you guys would enjoy that last little comment. So it will take me a couple weeks or, you know, 9 months, the same amount of time it takes to gestate a human. Thank you so much, Marav, for being open to this conversation. Thank you for being patient with me as I took my sweet, sweet time to get it edited and put out. And to the listeners, thank you guys again for listening. I'm so happy to have you here. And I am just so eager to get back to producing podcasts regularly. I miss you guys. I love you guys. I thank you so much for the community that you are a part of and for all of your love and support. And thanks, Marav and Noah too. Bye.
Thank you for joining me for this episode of the Single Greatest Choice podcast. I'm your host, Katie B. You can learn more about me, this podcast, and the Single Greatest Choice coaching at my website, www.singlegreatestchoice.com. Or find me on Instagram at single_greatest_choice. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a minute to rate and review in iTunes. That helps more women to find our show. Until next time, I'm sending you all of my love and support as you go about making the choices that will create a life you love.